Captain America throws his mighty shield. All those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. If he's led to a fight and a duel is due, then the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. That rhymes with geek, and I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And this week, we have a special junior agent with us, my son, best known to the world as Buddy. Say hello, Buddy.
Hello.
So, this week, everyone, we are talking Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Now, before we go any farther, this episode is going to be incredibly spoiler heavy. If you are even listening to this, it is obvious you are a fan of this genre, and you are going to see this movie if you haven't already. So, if you haven't seen the movie, stop this immediately. And go see the movie. Unless you're, you know, trying to break the record for circumventing the world in a hot air balloon or doing some reason that you didn't go this weekend, you need to go. As a matter of fact, I don't know why you're not driving to the theater immediately.
Yes, and you took the words right out of my mouth. And or you can listen to this while you watch the movie, but I have no idea why you would do that.
I don't know if that's a good idea. I don't think this is going to line up well.
No.
We'll probably spoil things before. Like, I don't think we're going to take the same time frame. That'd be an interesting idea.
Also,
I don't think anyone wants that companion piece, though.
Also, I would like to point out, as we're recording this, it is Monday, April 7th, but it won't go up until Wednesday.
Right. And so while we should understand the impact on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
yes,
we won't.
Right. We will, though, however, be talking about that tomorrow night on Agents of Speed.
I really don't think it's fair because the actors in Agents actually saw a pre-production version of the movie. What, maybe a couple of months ago, 6 months ago? And so they've known all along, for at least the last six episodes, what was going to happen.
Yes. So before we get into all of that, let's take a quick poll around the room and see how everyone liked the movie. John, what did you think?
No obvious plot holes. I am impressed. Seriously, I mean, it was that the plot was coherent. It was intricate. There were reasons that everybody was doing the things they were doing. And the action was as good or better than most of the other movies because the action had, there were reasons why they were fighting at the points they were fighting. It wasn't just a, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we put these two in a room and had them go at it? So I think I really, really liked it. And then, of course, there's also the holy crap thing going on with, you know, how it ended. But we'll get to that.
Ben?
Well, I definitely really, really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was great. There are certain things that didn't sit well.
Nice. Nice. I should have.
But we'll get to those as we get into the details.
And, Buddy?
It was a pretty good movie. I think it's one of the better Marvel movies, not the best.
Okay. You're in my opinion.
In my eyes, I think Iron Man 3 was a little bit better.
All right. We'll
you mean you. Regular Man?
Although that's an interesting thing for a child to say.
Yes.
Because that was more philosophical as well.
Hey, there's going to be Avengers 2, so there is more armor Iron Man out there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I am going to restate what I tweeted and put on Facebook after the movie. I feel that this was the Empire Strikes of the Marvel Universe to this point. Just for the fact that it felt very much like a very middle chapter.
Yeah, they changed a lot of things.
They changed a lot of things with the outcome of this movie.
They changed everything.
And there was somewhat of a dark tone to what was going on. And it was just well done. Like John said, I didn't see any real glaring plot holes in this movie. It was well written, well executed. And they stayed very true to the character of Captain America in this movie, which made me very happy. So, you know, all that at the end of the day equals a very, very good movie. So, yeah, I can't say enough good things about The Winter Soldier. So,
it wasn't Iron Man 2. It was like the anti-Iron Man 2.
Yes.
So what did you guys think of Sam Wilson and the Falcon?
So, I thought that I was a little nervous, I'll say, going into this, that he was going to be sort of plastered into the events, like, you know, hey, let's throw this Falcon character together and throw him alongside Cap. But they didn't. They really, really thought that through and did an excellent job of creating that character, of introducing him, of, you know, with the opening of him just sort of running around the mall and Cap kept lapping him, saying, to your left. And I thought it was a great intro. They fleshed out his character really well, having him being a former vet, having, you know, him work at the VA, and having the Falcon thing actually be something from his past. That's something he was part of a pilot program for. I thought that was really interesting. So I think I was really, really pleased with how they framed that.
Yeah, they did gloss. That was one of the very few things that they glossed over, was the why there was only one version of the suit left, you know, the Falcon wings, and what had happened to that whole thing. I guess there's more explanation that could happen, I guess, maybe in Avengers 2. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's in it. So
there's definitely potential for a backstory there. To fill in personnel. Those gaps.
But he had personality. Like you said, it was very well introduced. It was just one of those things where Captain America just happened to meet him because he kept lapping him and they started talking. And yeah, it's just like you said, it's just completely well introduced and the character kicks some ass and he was good.
Well, I think he was pretty good, but in my opinion, in a lot of some of the newer stories about the Falcon, his wings could shoot like feathers at the enemies. So I kind of like how they took like the feather shooting and make it into like his guns come out of the suit to resemble that.
Yeah, I am glad they avoided the you know, shooting feathers and the mental connection with the Hulk.
Well, wait, hold on. Okay, or Falcon. See, now that's the thing. I don't know who here knows the story of Falcon from the comic books.
I generally am aware.
Yeah, so
not really.
So he was crossbred with Falcon.
He was actually brainwashed by the Red Skull, who had the Infinity Gem to assassinate Captain America, and that's how they met. And then he got out of it. They became friends, and they became partners. Obviously, they weren't going to do all of that business in this movie, so like how they handled it was pretty good. But I kind of wanted a nod to what's the name of his pet Falcon?
Redwing or something.
That's it. Redwing. I wanted just a nod to Redwing. They didn't have to have, you know, him have a pet Falcon that he had a mental link to. Yes, I understand that's a little far fetched for those kind of movie they were trying to tell. But
you didn't.
But to have a Red Falcon flying around at some scene in the movie would have been a nice touch, you know?
Perhaps.
Have it get shot out of the air. Ooh. Hey, isn't that... Oh, no!
Oh.
Well, they kind of nodded to it about him having his wingman being...
No, well, yeah, but I mean, they didn't call him Red Wing. It wasn't the same, but... So
that's true though. That was the nod, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that they did take that approach, that there was a whole squadron, or at least a handful of these guys, and something happened as they kind of, like you said, they kind of glossed over it, and there was only one unit left, or one flying.
It seemed like I got the impression that as far as we know, there were really only two of them using these things. And the one of them went down, and so the thing probably got destroyed when he crashed. So there probably only was that other prototype that Sam Wilson had.
Right.
And which they went and stole. So.
Which also...
So I, oh. So I was just going to say that, you know, and we also, in the course of this movie, saw it get beat up.
Right.
And lost its wings. So I guess if he's going to continue being the Falcon, it's going to be with some upgrades from Tony Stark or something like that.
Tony has to be the Marvel Universe inventor of everything.
He does. He's the mechanic.
He's a living Deus Machina.
He's not the mechanic. He's the knight. It's the knight, the soldier, and the god. I mean, come on.
He's the mechanic.
The Hulk is actually the mechanic. He's Joe Fixit. Come on, people. Read the comics.
So, what did you think of it? The main guy didn't turn out to be the Red Skull.
I was going to address that. So it seems like my guess is that list. So we, and what John is referring to is there was a playlist that got leaked a while ago, a track listing for the soundtrack. And there were two tracks on it that people pointed out as teasers. One said, Alexander Pierce?
Pierce, yeah.
Alexander Pierce is Red Skull was a title of one of those tracks. And then the final track in it was Peter Quill's SOS. So neither of those were actually realized in the film. So my guess is either there was editing to cut those things from the continuity, or the list itself was a ruse to try to throw suspicion in one direction to try to get those rumors going and misdirect us.
Yeah. You know what you're gonna see in the Blu-ray special edition is going to be an extra scene where he pulls a Ming the Merciless, and you see him get back up from the floor and walk off.
Yeah, no.
Tackling with the German accent.
I think it was probably put in there again. I agree with the concept of it was a fake list to throw us off. Because it came out not too long before the movie was released, and you know, it's a good way to throw people off the scent of what the actual big reveals are in the movie, what the big plot twists are, you know? Had no one thinking what the big climax of the movie was going to be, because everyone thought, oh, the big climax is it's Red Skull, you know?
Right.
Well, I think the list might have been semi-fake. I think someone was, like, disguised and could have been the Red Skull.
Well, yes, but it wasn't.
But it wasn't him.
It wasn't him. That was not
right.
Yeah. So. So.
I said someone.
All right. Well.
It was Cap.
It was Cap all along. So, I also found it interesting the relationship between Black Widow and Cap in this movie.
That was an interesting, varied relationship, because it seemed like on one hand she kept trying to like poke him to get more involved in the world and, you know, have a social life. But at the same time, I kind of got the impression that, like, even though she kept suggesting that he date all these different people, I think she had a bit of a crush on him.
Well, come on.
Well, that's
Steve
that's part
Rogers
of the,
is dreamy.
Yeah, but that is part of the canon, isn't it? That usually they make a play off of her and Hawkeye, but then at the end, usually she ends up with Captain America.
Yeah. She's worked her way around the team a little bit. There's been a long continuity of these things. She's been around since the 40s in the comics, or 50s or something like that. So there's been plenty of opportunities for her to switch up who she's involved with.
Right.
I think the one I like the best is where she ends up with Captain America, because it turns out he's the only one that she can really trust, because he just doesn't lie.
Yeah.
And that's got to be something she just doesn't have with anybody else.
Right. But the irony of that is that she's constantly lying.
True, but she can kick just as much ass as he can, which is nice.
Yes, this is true, but, you know, I think you have to base a relationship on more than that.
Mm.
I mean, yeah. I know that's why you married your wife, because you both have the same fighting level, but...
Yes. Yeah. Having the same power level is a big, you know, it's a big pull, but...
Yes.
So anyway,
so
I thought it was an interesting dichotomy between the two of them, like you said, the constant liar and the truth teller. And I did kind of get the feeling that maybe she liked them, but again, also thinking about who the characters are, was it more of I'm going to fake, you know, thinking of the spy mentality, I'm going to fake this relationship with Steve Rogers to get to know him more on a friendship level, to get to know what he knows, you know? Because there's always that play, at least in the back end, you know? I'm just trying to get close because I need to know what you know. Are you a threat or are you my friend, you know?
Yeah, and you could read that into it, but I think that's... I didn't necessarily read that from her in this movie.
Well, maybe Scarlett Johansson isn't a good enough actress then.
No, because she played that part in Avengers. She did that with Loki. Like, play the emotional card, and she was even doing that when they introduced her in the beginning. Like, she was playing dumb and basically drawing information out of those Russian guys without them really being aware of what they were giving her. So she definitely has those manipulative skills. You know, and she also practiced some of that in manipulating situation in the mall, like to sort of help with their cover and keeping people from noticing them.
Right.
So I just think with Cap, she's just on the level. She's not trying to, she knows what to expect from Cap. She's not trying to read him or glean what he knows. She's just trying to be in his life.
Right. Yeah, and it is true. She did do the whole, let's fake a romantic relationship to, get away as well. So,
Yeah.
And seemed a little surprised when she found that she actually felt something.
Interesting.
But anyway, so what about Nick Fury dying? Spoilers.
So, well, spoiler disclamation has already been made. So yeah, so it wasn't what I had projected previously. He didn't actually die. They just staged his death. So, but still, it fit the scenes that they teased us. Like, it did end up being him that died, and then later showing up still alive.
Well, I mean, the things that didn't sit well with me with his death in the movie was a handful of things. Number one, I was really hoping that he was going to be saved by the same serum that saved Coulson.
Well, who said
right, and that's what I said. It didn't go that way.
No, this...
But who says it wasn't? I mean, who takes two shots like that and is walking around within like 2 days?
That's true. He could have been lying. Like, when he said what had happened, he could have been lying then.
Oh, that's true. Well,
but did you hear the list of things he said was wrong with him? I mean,
and basically said that.
And then he just said,
yeah, they gave me a shot that brought my heart rate down to like once per minute and snuffed me out of there before anyone noticed.
Yeah, but that still doesn't explain how he's up and walking around after taking two shots from the Winter Soldier, like, the abdomen.
You're right.
No, you're right. Okay.
I mean, you can't just blame that on, hey, he's a Marvel hero, you know.
And the other part of it was, I was kind of hoping his coming back was going to be more, I don't know, like, show up at the last minute to save the day, not... You know, come back and be part of the plan or something. Cause, I don't know, cause of the canon in the comics where he goes underground and disappears and no one knows where he is, it didn't feel like, you know, they explored that enough.
No, I don't know. I like the way they played it out. Cause it gave a chance for some exposition there between him and Cap that I thought was interesting and kept the movie moving in the right direction. I think to have him come back in the very last, you know, portion of it would have been just too, you know, oh, look at this back pocket thing we're going to throw at you. You know, I think having those machinations happen as they did felt more organic.
And yeah, it made sense. I mean, like I said, the writing on this was incredibly good, and it made sense that, you know, they brought Black Widow and Captain America back to him to the hideout where they'd plan what they were going to do about what was going on.
Right.
You know, so... Yeah.
Go ahead. Finish.
It was well written that way, and that he's going off now to go deep cover and, you know, fade to black for a while.
Invisible. Yeah.
That's,
we'll see him again.
Also, yeah.
Fade to black. Was that a pun?
Yeah, we're on there. But I did really enjoy the sequence, even though we saw parts of it before, with the whole car chase with him. Like like when he got surprisingly hit by the cop, and like the car told him that he had the fractured hip and told him to take a shot of epinephrine or whatever, and he did that, and like it's constantly giving him the feedback on
the systems and things, and he's like yelling at things like, "Well, reboot the damn propulsion system."
Yeah, OnStar has really come a long way. I'm sure.
It's like, well, what does work? The air conditioning is fully functional.
That was good.
Yes.
Yes, though for a moment it was. I did feel like for a moment though it wasn't Sam Jackson, Nick Fury. It was Sam Jackson, Snakes on a Plane.
No. Are they really that much different?
I know. There's a reason they picked him to play this part. I know.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that whole sequence was pretty clever and well done. and I thought his part in it was pretty good. And we got to see what was under the eye patch as well.
Yes, the question that has haunted people for many generations.
But that was just brilliant to be too.
Yeah. That was a brilliant turn on his part. Like, oh, yeah. Well, you can't take this retina out of your data banks.
If you don't know about it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got two different retinas you can do. Yes. Yeah, that was just, again, you know, that's something that was just planning, and it wasn't something that the writer pulled out of his butt to, you know, get himself out of a corner he'd written himself into. It was just pure brilliant. And it's something that character would have done.
Right. Although the one thing that threw me a little bit that they never really fully explained was earlier on when he was trying to access the data on that drive, which is, you know, the a USB drive on steroids or whatever it was, when it basically told him he couldn't access it because he didn't have the clearance level, because it was secured by himself beyond his clearance level, like they never really explained how that came to be, like how he secured it to a level that he couldn't access it. I mean, I assume that was, related to Pierce somehow, but it just didn't make sense. And it wasn't explained completely.
Well, I don't know. I explained it away in my head.
Sure you did. But I'm saying for those of us with more, keen observational skills, it was one of those things that nagged at me, that I expected some resolution to that.
You're lucky you're not here at the moment, or I'd smack you. What I'm saying is that after we found out who the true villain of the movie, or one of the main villains, who is Zola, and he had this all these different algorithms, that he maybe had an algorithm running on that drive to encrypt it and make it look like Fury encrypted it. You know, it was all Hydra's doing. It wasn't Nick.
Yeah, I know. I understand that. My point is that they didn't address it.
Well, they don't have to address every detail.
Yeah, they do. They have to address everything.
Let's ask the 11-year-old. Do they have to address every detail, buddy?
Well, they should have at least addressed one of the details that just didn't settle well with me. Did Captain America get back his shield when he dropped it in the ocean?
That is another open... we don't know what happened to it. Well, it wasn't the ocean. It was the bay. You know, but still, yeah, that is an open question. He was dragged out of the water by Winter Soldier, but he didn't have his shield with him at that point. So, who knows? Someone will find it, I'm sure, if it hasn't already been found. It's a good point.
Speaking of the Winter Soldier.
Right, so let's get on to the villain roster. Go ahead with what you were going to say.
No, I was going to say, again, I thought for the movie universe, very well handled. I love the explanation that, he was experimented on before Cap found him, which he was. Like, that wasn't a left turn. It was like, yeah, in the first movie, Cap found him, he was being experimented on. So, obviously, they did something to him. And then he loses his arm in the fall. That's how he gets the mechanical arm. And they just explain him living so long because they freeze him and bring him out when they need him to kill someone.
Yeah.
So, it was all...
Which follows the canon of the comics as well.
The only thing that got me, I had mentioned this earlier to you, Ben, we're sitting there in the theater, and there's the scene where Cap and Bucky, the Winter Soldier are fighting, and his mask comes off, and he turns around, and he goes, "Bucky?" And you hear half of the audience start, murmuring, and go, "Oh," and it's like, really?
You know, I think that the reason they framed it that way, they did it, they knew they were going to surprise people with that. I know that you are of the deeply entrenched geekdom that you know in your heart of hearts that Bucky is a Winter Soldier. But this may be hard to conceive of, Dave,
But there are people who don't read comics.
No.
And who don't read up on these things before okay. they see these movies.
Okay, I can take their people who don't read comics. And I can take people who don't look into the history of the character and know, okay, Winter Soldier is Bucky Barnes.
Right.
However, there are people who look at who's in the movie and should yes, know,
there are
oh,
some,
the guy the, playing Winter Soldier is the same guy who played Bucky Barnes in the first movie.
Right, but what you're also not realizing is there's an overlap between those people who look these things up and the people who already know these things. It's probably most of those people. The average movie viewer doesn't IMDb a movie before they go see it.
Well, they should, damn it.
I don't.
Okay. Well, I don't read comic books and or anything like that, but I knew that the Winter Soldier was Bucky Barnes.
Because see? You watched Earth's Mightiest Heroes. I know. So, don't try to pull a fast one on me there.
I don't watch Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
But you did.
You did. You've watched it with me. Don't deny it, buddy.
Don't try to pull a fast one there either. So, and my daughter knew as well, but it was actually one of those things that my wife was surprised by it. She took the kids to see it without me at an earlier showing. And they came back and she's like, I didn't know, like, that really surprised me. I was like, you know, Ian Cadence was like, I knew that. Like, yeah, and I also kind of told you that, like, 2 weeks ago, but I didn't expect you to remember that, so we'll hold it against you.
No, not this time.
So, yeah, she was one of those gaspers in the audience. And I think that that's great, that innocence still existed, that there were those out there who could enjoy that for the first time, you know? I think that's positive.
How about you, John? Were you shocked? Did we lose John?
I think he fell asleep. Or he's, something.
All right. Well,
we'll get back to
you. Continue on. Yes. Hopefully he yes. will come back on.
Rest in peace.
So yeah, I thought the Winter Soldier was very well done. The arm was stellar. And also was, they exploited the flaws in it. Like that it could be essentially like shocked out of, functionality.
Gasp.
Hey, there he is. That's a good comeback.
I thought I'd use a little onomatopoeia to see if you could hear me, but you know. Yeah, apparently the mute button on my microphone works too well. No, of course I was not surprised, for crying out loud. I knew Bucky was the Winter Soldier, and you know, because I watched Avengers 2.
But I mean, were you surprised that people were surprised?
Oh, yes and no. I mean, you know, there were a couple of guys behind me in the theater that were talking heavy comic book, deep canon stuff, and so they weren't surprised. But
yeah.
the couple of giggling girls two rows in front of me, yeah, they're like, oh, look, I know what that is. So you know, I wasn't surprised about them being surprised.
Right.
Right, and I understand that when Thanos shows up at the end of Avengers and everyone's like, who's that? I get that, because it's not like people know who Thanos is, but
right.
People should know Bucky Barnes is the Winter Soldier.
All of us geeks pretended to know who that was, but...
And everyone, another spoiler alert, he eventually becomes Captain America.
Thanos? No, that would be really weird. It's a strange aspiration for him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, in the comics, yes. Bucky does take up the mantle. I don't know if they're going to go that route in the movie continuity, but it's a possibility,
yes.
Which I think we've talked about with his contracts being more limited.
Right.
Steve, what's his name?
Chris Evans.
Yes, Chris Evans. But anyway, yeah, Winter Soldier was, I think, well depicted. As far as other villains, Arnim Zola, I thought, like, was pretty interestingly depicted, and I didn't pick up on the parody until after the fact. Like, I saw it pointed out online elsewhere. I'm like, oh, I never made that pairing. So the way that he was manifested in this, in that bunker, right?
Right.
So they're standing there in front of this big screen with his face on it, mm-hmm. with a box camera above it.
Right. Just like,
and that's how, just like his, you know, robot body in the comics.
Right.
But without the robot body part.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I got it.
I didn't pick up on it. I'll admit that. But, it was pretty clever. Because it's probably the closest we're gonna get to that, honestly. I don't think we're gonna see him come back and be, like, robot body with that stupid face screen and camera head.
I totally agree. I mean, it's also the closest we'll ever get to, like, you know, MODOK, you know,
yeah,
giant face kind of creature. So it's, yeah.
No, they'll just repurpose the stuff they used for Face of Bo. I mean, that was MODOK, wasn't it? You know, just put it in a little chair and gave it little arms and legs, and there you go.
He was a friendly MODOK. Right.
I'm crossing over. For everybody who doesn't know, I'm crossing over with Doctor Who, but hey, you know, who, yes. Why if I shouldn't die?
Why not?
All right, let's stay on.
Stay the course. Stay the course. Yes. So those are two main villains. Well, obviously, we expressed that Alexander Pierce was a bad guy, but the part of a larger organization of Hydra being back and still around.
Right. And so...
Talk about the elephant in the room.
Don't talk about Dave like that.
Which elephant? Hold on. Which elephant?
The one that was, you know, Hydra growing inside of S.H.I.E.L.D. for like 40 years.
Right. How do you say his first name? Arnim Zola.
Arnim Zola.
So that's actually the elephant in the room, right? Now we know it's actual history that, there were German scientists who defected to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Operation Paperclip, which was actually what it was called.
Right.
That's historically accurate.
Right. Operation Paperclip. And yet, you know, so everyone's gonna argue and say, oh, that would never happen because he's an evil person and he started taking over. But again, it's history. It really happened. However, those scientists weren't preserved on giant computers.
Right. I'm pretty sure that no one tried that out.
But a conversation I was having with someone else today, they were saying, okay, but how did he have all that control over everything when he was on an old mainframe computer sitting in a warehouse basement on an old army base? And I'm like, well, he was probably connected to the internet.
Yeah, the internet's everywhere, man. It's Wi-Fi.
Which begs the question.
How much porn did he watch while he was in there? No, wait, that wasn't the question. What was the question? Sorry.
There's children listening.
All right, sorry.
And there's a child right here.
Yes.
Right. So John and Buddy.
Right, which begs two questions. I will get to the second question a little later in the episode because there's things we need to talk about related to it. But do you think that was the end of him? Because computer consciousness.
I'll give you that. But technically, there could be other copies. Mm-hmm. That's probably the original copy because the first attempt to capture him that way. But you're right. We could potentially see him show up elsewhere in some, you know, other place in some other state.
In fact, the person I was talking to said, well, if he was as smart as he seemed to be, he would have downloaded himself to that thumb drive as soon as they plugged them in.
Perhaps. What did they end up doing with that in the end? I don't, like, he pulled it out of there, and then they were, and yeah, they jumped in the grate and survived the blast. But I don't remember seeing that thumb drive come up again after that point.
I don't know. Maybe they put it back in the into that snack machine, which they don't explain how he got it in the machine.
That was one thing that bugged me too. I was like, I saw him like go off, and I was like, all right, well, that thumb drive's going to get found. But then they panned back and showed it like behind three packs of Hubba Bubba. I was like, oh, that's clever, but how the hell did he do that?
Right.
Like, as far as I know, Cap doesn't walk around with a universal vending machine key, you know.
And he's not Kitty Pryde.
In his back pocket. Right.
If I might butt in here.
And he's not Mr. Fantastic.
Hold on. Buddy has a theory.
That's fine.
The guy was filling up the vending machine when he was in the hall.
Yeah.
So was he? He
was open. Yeah.
Okay.
So Cap could have sneaked in the hard drive. Good while catch, he was buddy. Filling it in.
Somebody's got some powers of observation.
So
here.
Maybe if you and I paid attention, Ben.
I was paying attention to the big picture.
Yeah, Captain America looked over. The guy was filling up the vending machine, and then the next scene was the thing all the way in the back of that one row.
I noticed him look back, but I didn't really register what he looked back at. So
okay. So moving along to the next villain.
So the next villain is Hydra, which is dozens and dozens and dozens of people.
Well,
so apparently,
we didn't really talk about Pierce, but he's not. He was just kind of the.
I'm going to lump him in with Hydra.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
The big shock for those who haven't seen the movie.
I was getting there.
Is Agent Sitwell is a Hydra agent.
Which I was getting there. I was going to nest it in something larger, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
So, what I was going to say is that apparently what we, the exposition we found from Arn and Zola is that Hydra has been alive and well since World War II and embedded in S.H.I.E.L.D. from its inception, you know, and constantly recruiting new members and being, you know, a sleeper cell in the organization and in the government all this time. And has such prominent members amongst it as Alexander Pierce, Agent Jasper Sitwell, the entire, you know, security team, and the senator we saw from the first, or the second Iron Man movie, played by Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
Which is not looking so hot these days, I might add. But he's looking worse and worse all the time.
The poor man.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Well, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., now, I'm just going off of, like, Hydra. The people they showed at the end of last week's episode was Hydra trying to bring the airplane in and capture Coulson.
Maybe.
Right. Well, we're going to get to that in a second, buddy.
We'll get to that. Let's.
Gary Shandling is only 64 as well.
He looks like he's 107.
That's really sad.
He looks like he's 107 and ate another 107-year-old.
Gary Shandling, if you're listening to this, we would love to have you on the program.
Yes, yes.
If only so we can step back and watch you beat the crap out of Ben.
I have all the respect in the world for Gary Shandling. I loved some of the shows that he did.
Gary Shandling Show.
I loved the theme song to it. And the Larry Sanders Show was funny. He's a funny guy. I'm just saying that he's not looking as hot these days as he, not that he ever looked hot per se, but he's definitely looking worse.
So the
wear.
Truth is you used to have a thing for him and now you don't understand why it helped go.
It's very manly. And I'm disappointed now that man crush is dead.
So.
No, I just thought, you know, they have a makeup department. They could make him look better. But whatever. So I have a question for you guys. All these Hydra agents.
So I have a question then for you guys.
Yes.
If you have the largest security organization in the world, which is S.H.I.E.L.D., and you find out that it's been penetrated with Hydra agents for years, deep within the levels, how would you handle that situation? John, you go
obviously,
first.
Obviously, you put it on the internet.
Really?
No, well, yeah, at that point, literally there's no way to separate the wheat from the chaff. There's no way to know. So the only way to do it is to take both organizations down. I actually think that was the right call.
I think it was the right call too. Spoilers.
Yes. Spoilers. This was the point. This is the point in the movie when everyone's minds went,
yes.
Wait,
what? Well,
especially those watching
effectively. Agents. You can't. John's right. There is no way to, you know, the fruit is spoiled. There is no saving it. You kind of have to take it all down together. There's no separating the good and the bad because you can't do it effectively or efficiently. Now, what I found kind of funny about the movie is like, so I agree with you, John, that there were no explicit plot holes in this movie. However, I would argue that their strategy fundamentally was flawed. In that, sure, they have these tri-carriers now floating around that if their plans had gone according to what they were expecting, would be essentially just these roving killing machines taking out anyone who would be detrimental to their cause. But in doing so, wouldn't that not implicitly start turning other people against their cause because, oh, you just killed my friends and loved ones. And even though I wasn't necessarily, you know, disobedient, you know, and uprising before, I might be now. And just making for more and more people, it'd just be an exponential thing that eventually there wouldn't be anyone left.
That's a fair point. Yeah, that's a fair point. I'll give you that. Because, I mean, when you looked at the targeting that they did during that one scene, it looked like they were targeting maybe, it wasn't like the small percentage that they were talking about. It looked like they had targeted like 90% of the population in the tri-state area.
Well, I think that was essential at that point because
they were, it was in the midst of, you know, literally factions battling against each other. So any S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were automatically targets. Any S.H.I.E.L.D. agents were, that were not part of Hydra were de facto targets, and it calculated that immediately, and then, you know, just grew from there. So, and I wouldn't surprise me that if S.H.I.E.L.D. itself had, you know, hundreds of thousands of agents.
Yeah, no, I mean, that, you get the impression that's how large it is, you know, in the movies and in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's just...
But it did also peg the president and a bunch of other, you know, random people around the area.
Like somebody sitting at Avengers Tower. I don't know
who that could be. Oh, no, yeah. Didn't it? I thought I saw it, like, target the Baxter Building and the Avengers Tower.
Well, it definitely targeted Stark Towers, which only had the A on it, you know,
It did. Okay.
But it was cleaned up, but he just kept it with just the A, which I liked. There was also, speaking of the wider universe, Sitwell dropped some names when they were interrogating him, which was kind of fun.
Oh, what did he say? I forgot that.
Well, he mentioned Bruce Banner, but he also mentioned Doctor Strange.
Yes, that was it. That's the one that got me.
Stephen Strange.
Yes, that's the one when he said, and then everyone stopped listening after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, what?
He actually also mentioned, like, more generically, some, you know, grad student from Iowa or whatever, which I read somewhere is, like, the only hero that actually would sort of fit with that particular reference is a fairly recent Avenger character, this girl named Smasher, who is fairly powerful.
But he also said Steve Rogers, Bruce Banner, Stephen Strange. I was like,
yeah.
I didn't even pick up on the Stephen Strange.
Well, that's because
you were busy thinking about the vending machine.
You were too busy thinking about the vending machine, exactly. we all love that when they hint at the larger Marvel universe, you know.
Yep.
They essentially took down S.H.I.E.L.D., which begs a lot of questions at this point.
It's like, what are we going to do with our Tuesday nights now?
It seems like we technically will still have something to do, but I'm curious what the producers at ABC are going to do. Joss's brother and his sister-in-law.
Well, maybe before we get into that, maybe we should go over the not one, but two trailing scenes that they had at the end of the movie.
Definitely, yes. So I agree with that. So the mid-credit bumper, that was the reveal of Baron Von Strucker?
Yes.
Was an interesting one, and I liked how he sort of scoffed off this whole, Hydra, S.H.I.E.L.D. debacle, as it was like, they're just two sides of the same coin anyway, it's now moot currency. but then, you know, it ended with the fact that he apparently had some experiments going on there, that most of which he was planning to destroy, but with the exception of the twins, quote-unquote, being Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Now, they were not...
seemed a little mentally unstable.
Yeah, there's no canon that says that they were ever experiments. They are tried and true born mutants, right?
Well,
But that's yes, that's a canon that's adhered to now. Their original origin wasn't necessarily explained. Like, when they were first introduced to the Avengers, their backstory didn't exist. They didn't have one.
Right. But here's the question. You can assume one of two things from that scene. They had powers, and Hydra or Von Strucker... What?
They were amped up somehow.
Or he was just experimenting on people with powers. Like, experimenting on Wolverine, giving him an antiantium, whatever.
Adamantium.
Skeleton, you know? Same premise.
Yeah, but that's not in this world either.
But I'm saying, it's the same idea. Or... They were doing experiments on them and gave them the powers. Which one do you think is more palatable to a large comic book fan base?
Here's what I'm going to go with, just based on the Marvel Greater Universe as it stands right now in the movies that Marvel's producing and the TV show. So we did see some characters in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. who exhibited abilities that were not derived from some sort of experimentation. At least one, the Scorch, who had the ability to you know, manipulate fire. Which sets the precedent that there can be some naturally occurring metahumans, for lack of a copyrighted word.
Right.
So in that sense, my guess is that that Strucker's whole MO right now is finding and identifying those types of people, those people who have latent mild abilities that may not be fully realized, but then also, you know, injecting with things and doing things to them to heighten them, to drive them to their maximum potency. Sort of like what, Reyna, the girl in the flower dress, had done with Scorch.
Right, right. No, that's quite possible. And, I mean, you know, time will tell. Next year, The Avengers 2 comes out, we'll know then what the whole story is, but
there's something else from that scene that we're overlooking.
The Loki Pokey Stick?
Yes, the Loki Pokey Stick. Which I think is an Infinity Stone.
Yes. Yeah, that's what Infinity I thought.
Gem. I think it's the Mind Gem. Yeah,
it is.
So we have the Mind Gem. We have the Reality Gem, the Ether from Thor 2.
Yes.
And some have posited that the Tesseract was a gem as well.
Yes.
Which is, I forget which one they called that.
The MacGuffin Gem.
No.
I forget which one they said it was. And then.
It was something.
And then at the end of, was it Thor 2 with that bumper scene for Guardians?
Yeah. Where they brought the Ether Stone to the Collector.
Right. Oh, okay. It was the Ether Stone? Okay. I couldn't remember.
It was a red gem. I didn't immediately pair it with the Ether thing because it was a gem and you never saw the Ether in that form per se.
Right, right. But it makes sense.
But in hindsight now, it fits.
Yes.
They could have framed it better.
We all know they're working their way up to the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
That's why they showed Thanos at the end of Avengers 1.
Yep.
Those who don't know, go read a comic book.
Is there a space gem? Maybe that's what the Tesseract is. A space gem? Is that a thing? No.
I don't remember what all the gems are. Ah, you're going to make me look it up, aren't you?
Not right now. Okay. So that was bumper number one. We also had bumper number two, which was the Bucky Barnes, you know, figuring out his past and hanging out at the museum and trying to reconnect with himself, and not in a weird way.
Yes, no, and so, well, before we get to the bumper scenes, Cap says he's going after Bucky. And, you know, he goes, I don't expect you to go along to Falcon. And he goes, you're right. And then he's like, when do we get started?
When do we start?
Yeah. Which I thought, I loved that at the end, you know, like showing their friendship starting, you know.
Yeah.
But right. So we know Bucky saves Cap from drowning.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cap decides to go after him. And then we end at the very end after the last credit rolls. Bucky looking at himself in the museum as in, ooh, is that me?
Yeah.
So, which begs the question, Cap 3? But...
Well, there definitely is going to be a Cap 3. They've already started
yes.
pre-production on it, at least. So that's a no-brainer. That's definitely happening, and I would be surprised if he wasn't in it.
Well
along with Loki.
The Loki Pokey Stick. Go ahead, bud.
I think what they're going to really touch on in Cap 3, if they are making it, is the backstory of Bucky Barnes, of exactly what happened in the time that from when he fell to when he was sent to kill Captain America.
Yeah.
Let's assume that they are going to make it, because the amount of money that this film has made and it broke records, they're going to make a third one.
Yeah.
Just hope that they hire the same writer.
Actually, what if they make a Winter Soldier standalone movie in between there?
Yeah, I think
you could
either do a standalone Winter Soldier story, which would work, within the universe they built, or is Captain America 3 Bucky taking over for Steve Rogers?
I think there would have to, it's a possibility, but I think there'd have to be events to warrant that. I don't think it'll just be taking over the mantle. I think something would have to happen to Cap to warrant it.
Right. Well,
the question is, even if that happens, will we see Winter Soldier in the Avengers, in Avengers 2?
I don't know.
Because that's coming sooner, right?
Yes. Avengers 2 is next year, and then Cap 3 is the following year.
Right. So that's an open question, too, is whether he'll show up there as
Winter Soldier, show up in Guardians of the Galaxy
version of him.
So real quick, because it was bothering me. So the soul gem, which is the green one, time gem, which is orange, space gem, which is purple, the mind gem, which is blue, the reality gem, which is yellow, and the power, which is red.
Okay. So I'm going with that the Tesseract, even though it is blue, is going to end up being the space gem, because that's how it affected things.
Right.
It did sort of teleport things around and act as a gateway.
Does the blue gem make the green gem stronger?
You're crossing your gems.
Oh, damn it.
Well, and it...
Can't cross the streams, John.
I'm sorry, this whole thing, this whole discussion is just reminding me how screwed DC is, but...
Yeah, oh yeah, they are really, really screwed.
Speaking of people that are screwed...
So, you mean Jesper Sitwell?
Well, he's really screwed, oh my god.
Yeah.
He's dead, he's gone.
He got what he deserved, I think.
Did he die? What happened to him?
Yeah, the Winter Soldiers threw him across into oncoming traffic, and all we heard was...
Oh, right, yes. That was it. That's right.
Yeah, there wasn't one of those, like, he disappeared off screen and maybe he survived. It was...
No, he was thrown into oncoming traffic. Yes. You didn't actually see him get run over, but there was very little chance that he walked away from that.
Right. So there was a sound effect, so let's just say that he's pasta. That's it.
Pasta?
So, oh, there is street pasta. Street pizza, really, more realistically. So there was actually one villain we didn't talk about.
There was?
Yes.
There was?
Batroc the Leaper.
What?
What?
Seriously, guys? The very first villain that Cap ends up dealing with on the boat is Batroc.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And he was leaping around like a crazy, you know, acrobat, kicking the crap out of Cap.
No, but you know what? It's funny. That villain was dealt in a way where you've kind of hoped they would do it in a Spider-Man movie or, you know, any other superhero movie, like, just throw him in a scene in the beginning, make him a low-level...
Right, a throwaway character, yeah.
Throwaway character, and have him fight the main hero, just so you can get that battle on screen, you know, in a realistic movie. You know, you don't have to make the Rhino a main villain in Amazing Spider-Man 2. He could just be a thug in the beginning that he goes after. But anyway, yes, I liked it. That was... Again, another well-done scene in this movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, and we also had Crossbones.
Wait, we had Crossbones? When did we have Crossbones?
Are you guys not paying any attention? The strike team that turned out to be working for Pierce, for Hydra. The leader of that strike team is Crossbones. The guy who ended up all burned up in the end when they pulled him out.
I know which guy you're talking about in the movie. I didn't realize he was supposed to be Crossbones.
He was. He is.
Interesting. Okay.
Details, guys. Details. So. Oh, yeah. And you say you took notes, John.
I did, but.
Doodles don't count. Doodles of Agent 13 don't count.
There's another good character they threw in Agent 13.
Yes. Which they didn't really reference her. At least her canonical identity, which would be Sharon Carter, Peggy's daughter.
Right. Well,
they just called her Agent 13.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't, you know, they have to do what they can. And the problem also with these movies is that they're getting bigger and bigger and more characters are being thrown in. You can't give everyone equal screen time and equal story time, you know. So,
true. I'm sure there was plenty of things put on the cutting room floor. You know, more exposition, more character development of some of these smaller characters. But there's only so much you can fit. And as it was not a short movie. You know, it was, I don't know what the running time of it was, but it was pretty long. It didn't feel long, but it was at least around 2 hours.
I think it was 2 hours and 20 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. So it was not short.
All right.
But go ahead.
All right. So, before we run out of time here,
The tape is running short.
Well, this one's just running a little long, that's all.
I
knew this was going to be a big one anyway. So what does this mean going forward for the Marvel movie universe and for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I mean,
they'll fix it next week. It'll all be fine.
In 45 minutes.
It's giant repercussions across the board. And I'm sorry, there is one issue, I said it this morning, and I've been like brushed off by a couple people. Cap and Black Widow technically committed treason.
Okay.
And they're not answering for it?
I think there's a lot of things to answer for here, and I think that the government has to make wise decisions about which, because honestly, the truth of the matter is, you know, there's always a degree of, you know, any charge has to be leveled. Like, yes, they may have committed treason, but it's the government's or the attorney's office's prerogative as to whether they charge them for it. You know?
You know, you can't commit treason against an organization that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Well, if the act you're carrying out was against a government agent that was corrupt to expose that corruption, then is it truly treason if it's a threat to the government itself?
Well, no, then you're a whistleblower, and that's even worse.
True.
Well, socially, yes, but it's not necessarily, you know, legally worse.
Well, I explain it away in my mind this way.
You got a part.
two ways here. Number one, we don't know exactly what was leaked, right? Like, they could have only leaked some things that were mainly related to Hydra. And you know, Fury is true to the comics as they can make them. He's got secrets in his back pocket that still no one knows about. He likes to compartmentalize, as he said in the movie.
Well, here's the other thing. Yes, Cap and Black Widow were complicit in the actions that revealed that data that put it public, which was treasonous. But they were not the ones who actually carried out the distribution of that information. It was, as far as records show, it was Alexander Pierce and Nick Fury. They were the ones who authorized the release of that data. So they are the ones who are culpable for that data, and for all intents and purposes, they're both dead. So there really isn't anyone to charge. You know, Black Widow and Steve Rogers can go both feign that they were acting on orders and not actually be culpable for anything. And if they were put upon any charges, I would imagine that they probably end up getting presidential pardons.
All right. Okay. And then, go ahead.
By the purple man who's in the office.
Did you have something to say,
Seth? Oh, God.
Well, I think I have an idea for Captain America 3. Gonna reintroduce Coulson and Nick Fury. They're gonna rebuild S.H.I.E.L.D. with Nick Fury and Coulson as the leaders.
Well, I think the rebuilding of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to happen in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Because, let's be honest, if they want to keep it based in reality as they've been trying, well, as close to, I'm sorry, I use reality loosely here.
Right.
But let's be honest.
Comic book reality.
Yes. Let's be honest, the government's not going to just let a billion-dollar infrastructure just go away. You know, the S.H.I.E.L.D. is an important part.
That is a lot of government jobs that are just, those people are out of work.
Millions of people out of work? No, they're not, that's not going to just fly.
Right. Well, we already saw some of them reintegrating into other places like the CIA and Stark
Industries.
Stark Industries.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Well, a lot of millions of Hydra agents lost their jobs, so that's good.
that probably is good, but we have to be able to identify them. I think that there's definitely going to be repercussions, which will still are yet to be realized fully. My thinking is the way that we're going to see this play out on the show, I don't think we're going to see S.H.I.E.L.D. Reestablish that quickly. I think there's going to be a lot to answer for, and we know politically these things take time.
Right.
So there'll probably be a good year or two where before they even have any discussion of rebuilding S.H.I.E.L.D. as an organization. They'll let it be fallow, they'll let it, you know, go to ground, and whatever covert ops they can keep running on the down low, they probably will, but that'll probably be few and far between. And one of those will be Coulson's team. So it'll be much less supported by infrastructure, it'll be more lean and rogue, and will have to fend for themselves a little bit more heavily. But I think that, you know, I think it fits into a form factor that Joss Whedon is very comfortable continuing to write for.
Right. Well, they did say, because, John, you had said that they got a preview of the movie months ago and they knew Captain America 2 was going to end that way. But I saw something today where they're saying the guys who created the show and are the showrunners and whatnot are saying they knew when the show started that this is how Captain America 2 was going to end. Like,
right. They knew this impact was coming.
Right. And they said if you look through the show, there's little things that happen throughout the show that all hint it at, you know, the impact of the entire universe that this was going to have. And, so now we're just going to have the last run up of the last, how many shows at this point? Five?
Yeah.
That are going to the finale. And what Joss Whedon said today in an interview was he's not ending the season having people feel disappointed if there isn't a season two. However, there are things that it's going to be teeing off at the end.
Yeah, well, actually, I read that oppositely. Or I think he said something the other day that if there isn't a season two, it's gonna feel raw. It's not gonna feel closed. It's gonna be open-ended, and there's a lot of unopened questions, unanswered questions. But I also read today that we may see Nick Fury in the finale.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to. I mean, I think that's fair for Coulson to get his resolution to, you know, get some answers.
Well, I also heard, you might see other cameos in the last few episodes. So, who's to rule out a Robert Downey Jr. or Chris Evans cameo?
That would be nice.
Yeah, although I think you're more likely to see... it would be cool if they could get Chris Evans to play Cap on the show in an episode. But I think you're definitely more likely to see someone like Maria Hill, some of the smaller characters.
Right.
Come over in cameo.
As I put to you today... You know, when we were talking earlier, they glossed over the scene where they go back to get the harness for Falcon.
Yeah, they did.
Again, so I said,
term for time.
I said it would be kind of fun if they tied that scene into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
It's in the hub.
Or maybe the scene where Coulson and the other guy were in the truck. And they were stuck in traffic, and then they were called to the retirement home, and they never really explained why they were stuck in traffic. Maybe Black Widow had blocked the traffic, and that's where the security building was where they were getting the harness.
Yeah, but, well, the events don't line up. Well, I guess it depends on what you think the alignment of events are. I sort of went on the, my assumption or hypothesis, or both, are that... When we saw that teaser at the end of the episode that seemed like it was a scene in the show with Nick Fury getting into that, the kerfuffle with the fake police officers.
Kerfuffle.
Is that was an attempt to do a time sync between the events of the show and the events of the movie. So that it was not an accident that wasn't teed up as here's a preview for Captain America. It was literally dropped in there as like, here's a scene for the show. Oh, by the way, it's also a preview for what you'll see in Captain America. It's sort of teeing up that's the point that we're at. From that the clock, you know, as it runs in the next episode will line up with the events of Captain America as it fits with that.
Yeah, I actually read an article today that kind of totally agrees with that as well. Not necessarily that time point, but that makes sense. And the fact that they were pointing at the fact that the events in Captain America take place over like 3 days.
Yeah.
And that's done on purpose for multiple reasons. They said, one, it doesn't allow time for Cap to call in Tony and Banner and Thor to help out. Right. So he's stuck with the people he had with him at the time.
Falcon and Black Widow.
And it makes it so they, you know, knowing that time frame, it's also how it's going to span and fit in with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which, you know, they didn't reveal exactly, but...
Right.
But that...
And that they were strategic in that they didn't actually utilize or show anybody from the S.H.I.E.L.D. show to give away any of the allegiances. So you don't know, you know, where Victoria Hand is going to fall, or where Garrett is going to fall, or any of the other players that they've been introducing, as whether they're S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra. I mean, I think we could all make our predictions, which will all seem stupid since the people listening to this will have seen the show and said, why would you say something like that?
Because we're stupid. Oh,
okay. Right. So we're not going to be stupid. We'll move on.
Okay.
For the people out there, we're talking in the past, so deal.
Right. There's this thing called recording audio for future listening pleasure.
So I want to throw something out there, a thought I had.
Mm-hmm. It's not a S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is Zola the clairvoyant?
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, when in that scene in the movie, I actually turned to Buddy and I said, "Ooh, the clairvoyant."
Yeah, it would fit with what we've seen in that the clairvoyant, like, because we talked about that scene in last week's episode where where we saw the guy in the chair who was like quadriplegic, couldn't move, mm-hmm. And we got the staged as if the computer voice was coming from him, but there really was no indication that it was, and that could have been staged on purpose to give them that impression. Right. When in reality, that voice was coming from the computer, coming from another source. But you're right, it could be Arnim Zola. It could be, you know, him talking through Deathlok as well. That he is not, that he's in the ether, so to speak, all over the place.
Yes.
So.
I mean, that's one, you know, that's just one theory.
Yeah.
It could be something completely different, and we'll find out starting tomorrow.
Right.
Or yesterday, depending on when you're listening.
Right. When we find out that Ward is a Hydra agent. Wait, what?
No, we all know it's Sky.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So I guess we all know that it is Sky.
Anyway, we'll see what happens. Or we will have already seen what happens when this comes out.
So yes, basically giant repercussions from this movie that
yes.
will shock. I mean, we don't even know how, what, you know, because there's no shield. How is this going to affect Avengers 2? How are they going to get together? How is, you know, it's...
Yeah, so well, I think that'll actually make it more important that they come together, because they won't have S.H.I.E.L.D. to rely on to sort of let them know a threat's coming. They're going to have to be more connected and more communicative than they have been to make sure that they have a way to get in touch with each other, and they have a means to team up if a threat comes.
Right, because I don't think Stark's cell service covers Asgard.
Not yet.
Not yet.
He'll find a way. He's got to reroute through the Tesseract.
All right, so, and I'm going to throw this out real quick, too, because it was a thought that I had today. If Zola's not the clairvoyant, could he be the AI in Ultron?
Nah. No, because so. He's got a destiny. He's got a destiny somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't think they'd meddle those things together. I think Ultron will be Ultron.
Okay.
Yeah, what do you think this is, Star Wars?
Door to that.
Everything isn't related to everything else. It's
right.
No?
Arvin Zola is not your father.
All right.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we have really beat this one to death. So,
to keep it short.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's always my goal every week. Keep this as short as possible. So I'm just going to keep talking and talking. So let's go around the room. Final thoughts and give it a rating, you know, 1 out of 10 capes. So we'll start with you, Ben.
Oh man.
Do you want to go last? Do you want to go last?
No, it's
we'll
fine.
With Buddy.
I'll go first.
Okay.
All right, let Buddy go first.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bud.
I thought it was an okay movie of how they pointed out things with like Winter Soldier with Mysterious throughout the beginning. They hinted around him in the beginning, but they didn't like fully say he's around. So, for that fact, I would give it a 7.5 capes out of 10.
Alright, John?
I gotta give this 9.5 capes. The writing was just spot on. It's gonna be hard for guys like Everything Wrong With and How It Should Have Ended to, you know, harp on a whole bunch of huge plot holes like they could with Iron Man 2. I really think that the writer should be commended, and I think Marvel finally, you know, got one exactly right.
What happened to that half cape?
Because I don't give a full 10 unless it blows my mind.
Yes.
That's reserved for stuff like How to Train Your Dragon or something.
His wife doesn't even get a full 10. So anyway, Ben.
Oh.
Oh, that's a low blow. I agree with John that I think that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to date, this was probably their best outing so far. I'm trying to remember what I rated Iron Man 3 at. I want to say I gave it a 9. So I'm going to have to go with a 9.5 on this as well, because it definitely, I think it was a step above that. And I'm going to reserve that half cape, not because I don't think this movie deserves it, but I want there to be a higher bar that they can reach.
Poppy.
first two rules of show business, everyone, don't work with animals and children. So anyway,
I didn't know yet it's on the show.
I will say, okay, so again, I loved the characterization of Steve Rogers, Captain America, in this. He's all about actual freedom and not, you know, fear and, you know, a sentiment that's been echoed 1,000 times in the comic books, and I love seeing them get it right in the movies. I'm with John. There aren't giant plot holes that you can drive a truck through in this one. Well executed, great special effects, enough action mixed with enough, dialogue and exposition to know what was going on. No questions about the plot left at the end, just questions about the repercussions. And I'm gonna, again, stick with the Empire Strikes Back, theme here. You know, they're in phase two. This is their middle act and their three act play. If we're going to say phase one, two, and three, not knowing what's after that. And in your act two, you reset things, you change things, you go a little darker, and they hit the nail on the head with this. So I'm going to agree with my co-hosts and say 9.5. And I hope Avengers 2 is a 10. So yeah.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this, first off, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Right. Why you've listened to this much of it without having gone to see the movie, you've been warned, first of all. And second, put down the headphones.
Yes.
Put down whatever else you're holding, which I'll be friendly since there's kids involved. And go buy the tickets and see this movie. I don't care if you actually break into the theater. I don't care. Go see this movie.
Right now.
Make a Kool-Aid, you know, Kool-Aid man hole in the wall to get into the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And watch it.
Oh, God.
But if you're seeing it in the far in the future, get the DVD.
Yes.
Okay.
Nice.
And if you are alien overlords listening to this centuries in the future, find a way to watch that through the mental consciousness of the internet.
Use the Infinity Gem to change reality and make the movie happen in real life.
And we apologize for whatever you've listened to of ours.
Our overlords. So we'll wrap it up there. So to everyone listening, just a reminder, we have our Tug event, out there to go see, Knights of the Legend, Legends of the Night, sorry.
Knights of the Legend.
Start over. We have our Tug event out there. We're having Legends of the Night play at the AMC Neshaminy Mall on April 27th at 2:30 in the afternoon. So go to our website. There will be a link in the description of this episode. And buy your tickets and help support the National MS Society. It's a great cause that we firmly believe in. And a percentage of the proceeds are going to that. You can also make a donation right on the Tug event website. So please check it out and do that. And on that note, as always, ladies and gentlemen, don't let your cape caught in the door. Have a good week.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape. This episode of Superhero Speak was brought to you by Blueberry.com. Head on over to Blueberry.com and use the offer code SUPERHEROSPEAK to get 1 month free on their hosting or premium statistic plans. That's Blueberry.com, BLUBRRY.com.